morning, you're listening to The Third Degree. I'm Simon Unwin. You may have missed it, but recently the federal government has made some significant changes to its clean energy futures package. They've announced that the carbon trading scheme will no longer be subject to a carbon floor price when trading of carbon permits begins in earnest in 2015. Instead, the price of carbon permits will be linked to the European carbon market. And even more recently, Resources and Energy Minister Martin Ferguson declared that the government will no longer be negotiating to buy out and close some of Australia's most polluting coal-fired power plants. So, for a closer look at what these two announcements mean, I'm joined by Gareth Bryant, a climate justice campaigner with Friends of the Earth Sydney. How is this transition from the carbon tax to the carbon trading scheme meant to work?
Previously, one of the features of the transition was the carbon tax was a fixed price. Basically, the carbon tax operates a little bit like a trading scheme. So polluters could still trade permits, but they could only trade those permits at a set price, which was starting at $23, around about that, and gradually going up. And then when the trading scheme would come in, rather than having a fixed price, there would be a particular amount of permits in circulation, and then the price for those permits could go up or down depending on the demand and supply for those. So basically, one of the features of that scheme was to have a floor price of $15. So that was sort of a more regulatory kind of aspect to that scheme. And then what's been announced last week is that there will no longer be a floor price, which means that the price carbon permits can be traded can be below $15. So what we're kind of seeing here is a watering down of the more regulatory aspects of the carbon trading scheme. So after 2015, it would have been a carbon trading scheme, but it also would have had that kind of tax-like aspect to it in that the price couldn't go below a certain amount. Now that'll be gone, and we're going to be the government is much more reliant on the market to deliver outcomes.
Yeah, so it's gone from having a bit of a fail-safe point beyond which it can't go. I suppose the race to the bottom could only go as far as the $15 mark. But now, as you say, we're leaving it a lot more in the hands of the market.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, this really is a major cave in to the polluters' interests. I mean, the original scheme itself was, I thought, a massive cave in to those interests. So you had a lot of free permits being given away. So even though, you know, there was ostensibly a carbon price, that carbon price wouldn't really operate for quite a large percentage of the permits. You had a lot of compensation as well. And then now you've got carbon floor price, which will be removed. And the very purpose of that is to reduce costs further to polluters. Why would you want to get rid of a carbon floor price if you didn't want it to possibly be able to go under that floor price? So it really is a big win for polluters in Australia, this announcement.
I guess one of the arguments that the government is making in relation to this decision is that by linking the Australian carbon price with the European Union emissions trading scheme, that shows that we're not going it alone, which is, I suppose, meant to use that argument from Tony Abbott and the Liberals that Australia's just going it alone in terms of trying to reduce its emissions with this scheme. You know, that they're arguing we're coming into the fold with the European Union. I mean, how do you feel about that kind of argument?
I mean, I guess I'm sceptical of the politics behind that argument. I mean, it may persuade a few very switched on and people who understand a little bit about the technical kind of aspects of carbon trading and how this might work. But this is certainly a scheme that people do have trouble understanding. And I don't think these kind of technocratic carbon market reforms is really going to shift the politics of climate change. I mean, potentially it's aimed at, you know, the people writing opinion pieces and all that sort of thing, but really I am sceptical of that argument. I mean, one of the problems with linking to the European emissions trading scheme and simultaneously dropping the floor price, which apparently was a precondition of linking the two schemes, is that the floor price sort of protected against carbon price volatility. So by linking to the scheme, we're actually exposing ourselves to that volatility. And, you know, the EU carbon price has continually gone up and then down, and it's crashed quite a lot of times.
In terms of that volatility, I mean, what has the experience been within the European Union of how an emissions trading scheme like this, which is very liberalised and doesn't have a floor price, I mean, what's the experience of that been as a an ongoing thing. How's it been shown to work?
It's been shown to work very poorly, really. In 2005, the scheme started. Since then, the carbon price was around about, you know, in the 20 euro mark for a little while. And then what was soon discovered was that governments over there had given their polluters way too many permits. So there was a massive over-allocation of permits, much more permits than was required to cover the actual pollution. So the price completely dropped. And Friends of the Earth is very, at best, ambivalent about carbon pricing. We certainly think that there's much more fair and effective ways to address climate change through much more direct measures and much more democratic measures. But, you know, the logic of carbon pricing is that price signals will drive change. And if you don't even have, if you've got a carbon price sitting at, you know, less than 10 euros, that's going to do absolutely nothing. So basically the price has stayed fairly low, pretty much because polluters over there have, much like in Australia, have lobbied and got their governments to cave in to their interests and give them much more permits than they needed to reduce their costs. There's also been a significant amount of fraud in their scheme. For example, the registries where carbon permits are kept have been hacked into and their permits itself stolen. So this sort of, I think this kind of illustrates in some ways the absurdity of pollution trading, where you can actually steal carbon permits and sell them. So you're actually stealing emissions reductions and then reselling them on. So there's actually a whole lot of fake or doubled up permits floating around. There's not a lot of integrity in those permits. There's also been a whole lot of tax fraud. Organised crime has sort of bought permits and onsold them with extra tax on them, pocketed the tax, and then, you know, put the money in offshore bank accounts and that sort of thing. So there's more fake permits going around in that respect too. So there's not a lot of integrity in the European Union scheme.
Another practice that I've heard about, at least, is companies in the European Union overestimating their initial levels of emissions, you know, when the scheme came in, and then when they were able to implement efficiencies really easily into their production, they were then able to sell on quite a few unused permits, because they'd been able to have quite easy gains in efficiency, but they'd waited to implement till after the scheme came in.
Yeah, sure. I mean, that's just one of the many loopholes in carbon trading. I mean, the argument about carbon trading is that there's a cap, and, you know, everything, all this happens within that cap. But examples like what you've just shown show that the cap is rarely ever enforced. There's all sorts of things you can do, and at best, you know, you can make these kind of marginal improvements. So the European scheme has been shown to, you know, incentivize a little bit of energy efficiency, although a lot of that, I'm sure, is a little bit fraudulent, because one of the paradoxes of emissions trading is it's justified on the basis that it's the cheapest way, but in order to actually enforce it, that requires a hell of a lot of monitoring and regulations, which governments don't want to do, so then that leaves open the door for the kind of fraud that you just explained.
You're listening to 2SER. The track that you just heard was from local duo Albatross, and the title of that one is Murder. You're listening to The Third Degree, and we're speaking here with Gareth Bryant, a climate justice campaigner from Friends of the Earth Sydney. And we've been talking about the new decision that the government's made to no longer have a floor price in any emissions trading scheme from 2015. Gareth, you were sort of saying earlier that if we're going to have a carbon price that's sitting well below that previous floor of $15, depending on what's happening in that wider market, that's obviously going to affect decisions that these companies make about whether they can keep viably operating, whether they need to change their business model, that sort of thing. And we've seen a bit of that this week, because Resources and Energy Minister Martin Ferguson has stated that the government will no longer be negotiating to buy out and shut down some of Australia's dirtiest coal-fired power plants, including the notorious Hazelwood Brown Coal Plant in Victoria. Yeah, so, I mean, what's your reaction to that news? How do you think these two parts of the Clean Energy Futures package are going to interact? What's your reaction to that news, basically, that they're abandoning that part of the scheme?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really quite consistent with the announcement last week about the floor price. So this was another more direct regulatory approach to addressing climate change. It wasn't perfect in that you're basically giving, you know, what was it, $2 billion to coal-fired power stations to close when these coal-fired power stations have clearly known about climate change for a long time, had known that their pollution would eventually be reined in, and what they were doing was a major contributor to climate change. So in some ways, you know, the process isn't perfect, but at the same time, you know, there's an urgent need to phase out coal-fired power generation, and, you know, this was one way to do it. And once again, you know, the government has sort of caved into those polluting interests, abandoned a more direct regulatory approach to climate change, and they basically will leave it to the carbon pricing scheme to decide whether or not these kind of coal-fired power stations can operate or not. This approach was certainly signalled in the energy white paper that was released last year by the government. It basically, you know, said that we don't need things like paying to decommission coal, and we don't need things like the renewable energy target, because we can all leave it to the carbon price. And this is basically consistent with that pro-market approach that the Gillard government seems to be embracing.
I suppose it is concerning that, I mean, this is one of the few parts of the Clean Energy Futures Package which was, you know, the kind of action that you were sort of hinting at earlier about, you know, being a bit more direct and a bit more, perhaps some people would maybe describe it as interventionist, to directly make sure that these really very dirty coal-fired power plants, five of the worst basically, would no longer operate. It'll be interesting to see whether the market actually does have that effect, you know, whether it actually does it cheaper than directly buying them out would have been.
Yeah, I mean, the whole purpose of carbon pricing, the logic of it, is to find the cheapest emissions reductions, no matter what they are. So from the perspective of a carbon market, it doesn't matter if a tonne of pollution is coming from hazel wood or it's coming from a tree being cut down or from a gas-fired station or somebody just cooking on a stove in India or something, which is where the offset question sort of comes in. So it's sort of blind to that and it just wants to, you know, reduce pollution where it's cheapest, which encourages at best, you know, the most marginal kind of, you know, at the edge of the economy. And what we really need to do is transform the core of our economic system, which is based on fossil fuel-led economic growth. So I think it's quite unlikely that the market will address these kind of issues, at least as well as it needs to. Certainly, there is a chance that some of these coal-fired power stations will become uneconomic. One of the key things that could help that is if the government obviously also simultaneously reduce their subsidies to coal mining and coal-fired power generation. But basically, what's been relied on now is the European Union carbon price. So basically our price will more or less reflect their price after 2015. So we've really kind of, I think in many ways, outsourced our climate policy to Europe. And, you know, we know that that hasn't gone so well previously. And I really don't think there's huge amounts of signs that even though the government was saying, you know, the carbon price in Europe is projected to be $40 by 2015 or 2017. I mean, these are just meaningless projections. You know, they have tightened their allocations, but at the same time, they've undone a lot of that good work by exempting a whole lot of polluters on the basis that they're trade exposed and all that sort of thing. And the other kind of major problem that the European Union has faced is economic crisis. So when there's an economic crisis, carbon prices crash because output goes down, people don't need carbon permits anymore. So basically the whole thing falls apart and there's really not a lot of sign of economic recovery, of course, in Europe. Yeah, I mean, I'm not particularly confident that there's going to be a carbon price that's sufficient enough to drive these kind of changes.
There's been some really interesting information to come out just this morning in what I've been reading about this decision from Martin Ferguson and the federal government to stop negotiating with those coal-fired power plants to buy them out. And that's been that, in Ferguson's words, more or less, they were asking for more compensation than the government was actually prepared to pay. So there's been suggestions, I think, in the Herald this morning that coal-fired power plant operators are now sort of believing that their assets are actually worth more than previously thought. That would have a lot to do partly with global carbon prices staying low. And I think that's a really interesting effect of, yeah, things like economic recession in Europe having these really wide-ranging effects on how we deal with carbon emissions if we're going to leave it all to the market.
Yeah, for sure. Recession does reduce emissions on paper, but it doesn't actually result in those sort of transformations that we need. So then once economic activity picks up again, so will emissions. The effect of recession when your main plank of your climate policy is carbon pricing is problematic. But there's a lot of you know, things to be said that government investment in renewable energy, publicly owned renewable energy, could be a much more effective and just way to respond to climate change in times of economic crisis.
That's right. I mean, I don't think anybody particularly wants their emissions reduced by losing their job or...
Yeah, well, exactly. And, you know, this is a key role for government to manage the transition. If the market is going to be left to manage the transition, then we're not going to get a just transition.
Do you know where are people getting that €40 price in 2015 from?
It's just modelling, basically. So there is some forward trading that goes on. Of course, one of the key aspects of carbon trading is the role of financial markets. So you've got a whole lot of derivatives, option speculation that goes on, and a lot of finance markets make a lot of money out of it, even especially when it's volatile. It can be quite profitable for finance markets. So
yeah.
You'll have polluters sort of buying carbon when it's low, years in advance for use in the future, so they can try and lock low carbon prices in as early as possible. And that's one of the things that will happen with one of the other components of the announcement, which was, I think, came out over the weekend or maybe was buried away in the announcement last week about the floor price, which is that the government's going to bring forward selling permits starting from next year, or they were going to auction 15 million permits, now they're going to auction 40 million permits. So one of the purposes of that will be for traders and polluters to start kind of bring forward that carbon market and start the kind of carbon market bonanza.
Sorry, 25 million more permits than were previously going to be available?
It's not so much more permits that were going to be available, so that rather than more bring forward auctioning.
Okay. Yep.
So they'll be available earlier, but it won't. It may or may not have an effect on the overall cap, the amount of permits.
And the overall shape of the market. The reason why I asked about the price is because the Greens leader, Christine Milne, released a statement today about the decision by the federal government to stop negotiations for the coal plant buyouts. And one of the sort of aspects of her statement was basically saying this was the best opportunity that these guys were going to get to sort of go quietly, because her statement demonstrates quite a bit of confidence in that projection that the European market will have a fairly high carbon price when it cuts in. What do you think of that, that the Greens being very confident in this market solution, and particularly the European or globalised sort of market solution?
You know, there's so many variables that could affect that. I mean, if there's a second or third economic crisis in that time, there's no way the price will be up to that. And it all depends on basically the lobbying and the negotiations within Europe between their key industries and the European Commission, as well as different country governments, about how many allocations they're going to be, how many are going to be free, who's going to be exempt because they're considered trade exposed, as well as some of the negotiations around how many offsets they're going to be able to use and what's going to happen in UN negotiations. So there's so much uncertainty and so many factors that could change what the carbon price is. And it is a very kind of risky approach to addressing what is really a pretty urgent problem.
Yeah, I just found that interesting, that level of confidence that it won't have crashed again, basically, given its short history so far.
I mean, I would certainly like to see the role of the Greens promoting much more direct government investment in renewable energy and reinstating their kind of approach to sort of push the government towards more regulatory responses to climate change, more democratic responses to climate change, engaging with people and really saying, look, what do we want a clean energy future to really look like? You know, where are the jobs going to be? What are they going to look like? You know, who gets to make these decisions? So at the moment, the decisions get made by the market. What the Greens could be doing is putting forward a kind of much stronger vision, which gives people then, in turn, reason to campaign for particular climate responses. One of the arguments from the Greens is that reduction in use of offsets was a big positive development.
Do you disagree with that assessment?
Well, I know, I think that is a positive thing, to reduce the amount of clean development mechanism credits, but a lot of that good work has been undone by allowing the EU linkage. So basically you're substituting one form of carbon credits for another. So there's a huge amount of problems with clean development mechanism offset credits, which don't represent real emissions reductions, have caused a lot of social and ecological damage to local communities. So Friends of the Earth has been campaigning heavily against the use of international offsets from developing countries, which, you know, are extremely problematic. So the reduction in their potential use is certainly welcome, but what you're getting is then instead of those, we'll just use the European carbon credits, which, you know, for all the reasons of fraud, over allocation, and all those sort of problems that I went over before, they don't really have that much more integrity than those credits. And really, the key thing is that emissions reductions, if they're even real in the first place, will come from Europe or will come from developing countries rather than in Australia. So there's still going to be the same 50% limit on international credits, which means that 50% of emissions reductions between now and 2050 can come from overseas, so we don't even have to actually reduce the emissions here in Australia. So end result will be, you know, the same amount of inaction in Australia.
Okay, yeah, I don't think I quite understood that decision before, but yeah, I guess I can see why being able to use the European offsets rather than the clean development mechanism ones is, I suppose, the lesser of two evils in a way, because, you know, you're not buying offsets that are based on people being displaced when their homes are flooded for hydroelectric dams in India, for example. But, yeah, still, the end result in terms of actual emissions and emissions reductions is still quite ineffective.
Yeah. So certainly the social and ecological kind of destruction that has been associated with those clean development mechanism offsets is probably worse than the European scheme. So maybe those European credits are, you know, marginally better. But really, you know, we need to be saying we need to, you know, urgently transform to a zero carbon economy in Australia rather than rely on 50% of our emissions reductions coming from overseas and dodgy international credits, which will basically cause, when you look at the Treasury modelling, there will be no overall reduction into 2050 of Australia's emissions. You know, they're modelled to actually stay at the rate they are now, and all any actual reductions from what they are now will come entirely from offsets. And I think, you know, we're only looking at the government's funding of RED, reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation. They're kind of really pro-market engagement with UN processes. They're going to, even though they've reduced the Clean Development Mechanism eligibility within Australia, which is definitely a good thing, they are looking in the long term to really expand the use of carbon offset credits internationally.
And that was Gareth Bryant of Friends of the Earth Sydney speaking to me here on The Third Degree. I'm Simon Unwin. That is all from us this week at The Third Degree. But do stay switched on to 2SER for The Daily coming your way imminently. Thank you.